Hello, welcome to a special podcast episode brought to you by the McMullen Museum of Art at Boston College. My name is Megan Minahan, class of 2020 and a McMullen student ambassador. Today's episode features an interview with professors Mark Cooper and Jane Cassidy of the Art, Art History, and Film departments. It is hosted by student ambassador Chris Rizzo as they discuss professors Cooper and Cassidy's installation Aftermath.
Good morning, everyone. My name is Chris Rizzo. I'm a student ambassador at the McMullen and a senior art history student here at Boston College. I'm here speaking today with Professor Jane Cassidy and Professor Mark Cooper, who are the main designers of this Aftermath installation at the McMullen Museum. Jane, would you mind introducing yourself?
Yeah, sure. I'm Jane Cassidy. I'm professor of digital art in the Department of Art, Art History and Film. I'm on leave at the moment and I'm calling from Ireland. Hello.
All the way across the pond. Thank you, Jane. And Mark, would you mind introducing yourself to the audience as well?
Thank you, and sure. My name is Mark Cooper. I am Director of Undergraduate Studies in the Studio Arts, professor, and teach primarily ceramics, mixed media ceramics, work with senior majors and minors at Boston College.
Wonderful. Again, thank you so much for being here. This is a really exciting opportunity for us at the McMullen to talk about this important installation. So let's just jump right into the questions here. These questions will be directed at both of you, so feel free to you know, offer your input and give us some of your insight into Aftermath. My first question is pretty straightforward. What inspired your installation, Aftermath? Why did you choose the subject of fast fashion? Why did you find that area so attractive?
Well, I can start. Dean DeVoy actually invited me to help create an installation, believing that using visual arts in combination with science and other sort of approaches was the best way to draw attention to issues around recycled clothing, fast fashion, the environmental damage involved, and the racial inequity involved, because most of it ends up in dump sites in poor communities in the US and around the world in places like Ghana or Peru or Chile. So that's how I got involved.
Wonderful. Thanks, Mark.
Yeah, and I had talked to Julia DeVoy as well. And I think we talked separately to myself and Mark chatting to her. And she had presented her research on fast fashion. And she was wondering if there were any artists interested in collaborating. And I'm absolutely interested. And I thought it would make really interesting content for my animation class. And like on a personal level, I'm really against fast fashion. So it was like really nice to be able to dive into further research with it and then share it with students. And then myself and Julia had talked about different ideas and I was like, I think it would fit well for animation. And then Mark came going, I'm making a big textile sculpture. So then I was like, okay, let's do it. So we did. So that's kind of how it came about.
That's great. And, you know, Jane, you mentioned being against fast fashion as a practice. And Mark, I think you also talked about kind of those global consumption patterns that fast fashion fits into. Could you, either one of you or both of you, explain a little bit about what fast fashion is and why it has a negative impact on the environment or on the world?
Well, part of what's in the installation is a simulator made by some of the other collaborators, and you could actually put a piece of clothing in that's got a computer component and tell what gases and toxic materials are given off. But there's it's just done an enormous damage to the environment, which we all know is, you know, needs some help, not more destruction. And, you know, I've learned a lot through this process that I didn't even know about fast fashion and just recycling clothes in general. And just the enormous problem with if it ends up in dump sites, you know, and hopefully part of what this project will do And there's a website which has lots of sections which other collaborators have created, students and faculty, where viewers can go and they could learn more about fast fashion and learn more about the environmental damage. But also there's a place where they can start conversations about solving problems and what do we do to change this. So my hope is that that's part of the outcome of all of this.
Yeah, I think then even on a personal level, chatting about it, like I think ever since like I was a little kid, I was always going to charity shops or thrift stores buying clothes, and I really try and avoid buying new clothes as much as I can. I break it sometimes, but mostly I'm big into repairing clothes. And you know, even if I see my nieces, they're always buying new clothes all the time. And now Primark is in Boston, which is so worrying because like they're one of the worst perpetrators, but like there's so many that we can pick on. But like the US makes something like 34 billion pounds of clothing, new textiles every year, and 66% of that goes straight to landfill. Like new textiles goes to landfill, you know, let alone the stuff you just buy. Like it's atrocious. And then so much of that, so like a third of that or something is sent away for landfill. And it's just so polluting. It's so unnecessary. And talking about it through art is just another way, rather than reading the statistics or opening yourself to the more formal ways that the information might be presented, it gives you a different way of interpreting and another way to access the information. I can't remember exactly what the question was, but I feel like I'm hovering around an answer for it.
Well, you know, I agree with what Jane is saying, though. It's experiential learning is very powerful. And you can talk about an idea, but, you know, the feedback I've gotten and all of my students, you know, I mean, for my part, we started the collaboration by, you know, me working with many, many students, going through ideas of what could this installation look like? What should we name it? They've all gone to see it, you know, follow up so that the learning is transferable to other things. And you know, across the board, everybody's overwhelmed when they see just this mountain of recycled clothes and the animations, and they go to the site. So, you know, it's visceral experiencing, you know, the visual representation, even though this is like a tiny bit compared to a dump site. But nevertheless, you get the idea. So it's a really fantastic tool to communicate. And honestly, the sum of the parts is greater than the individual parts. So it's the sculptural form or the quality of the animation is subservient to the idea in this case, which is it's all about communicating around this topic.
Absolutely, absolutely. And this installation marks an intervention at one point of that process, but it is a process. I want to talk a little bit about the artistic process, how this installation came to be. You both each create art in different mediums. Professor Cooper, you work with ceramics, sculpture, and painting, and Professor Cassidy, you do a lot of digital media and music. One area where you do align is creating immersive experiences for viewers. How did this alignment and also your experience in different media affect your creative process for creating this installation? And could you both, you know, speak a little bit about your experiences of working together? Obviously, you both teach here at Boston College, but what was it like to work together on this installation? And then that last part of that question, you know, what maybe were some things that you learned from each other? That's a loaded question, so feel free to tackle whatever part of it you want. I'm realizing I kind of asked three in one there.
Well, I guess a quick short answer is I am so impressed with what Jane and her students did in a very short period creating these animations. It's amazing. And I think that if you just came up and to see this, the physical manifestation of all this clothes on these wood shelves and the simulator, but there was only wall text or whatever, you'd have to read the wall text. It'd be hard to understand what it was. And having this, you know, video, this loop of these animations, you know, really lets people know very quickly, you know, what it's about, and a range of ways to think about it. So it to me is essential. And also what I'm interested in these immersive installations is how the different parts trigger viewers to make associations, and they bring their own thing to it. Whereas just a straight narrative, you know, here's the beginning, here's the middle, here's the end, you know, you're kind of lecturing them. But they're like, wait, there's an animation, and wait, there's a simulator, and there's a structure, and there's the clothes. So they're having to kind of pause and try to understand. And they, and everybody that's gone when we had discussions, you know, after the fact, we did sort of, let's critique this thing. What's good? It's going to go to the Smithsonian in Washington, D.C. Anything should be added. You know, they all needed those parts to understand it. You know, they were overwhelmed. It's like, oh my God, look at all those clothes. But then what? So the working together is essential and huge. And then I guess finally, my approach to collaboration is having all the individuals speak with their own voice. And it's those combinations of different voices that in a way mirrors nature. You know, it's sort of unpredictable when you put these things together in a way that one person can't quite get to alone. And you know, but the way this flower grew just the way it's supposed to because of heat or cold or light or lack of light. And, you know, it has that element of just being mm-hmm. natural.
I love that idea of like almost creating an arts ecosystem, right, with different artists and Jane's students as well.
And you, the scientists and the computer yep. people and everybody else, you know, the web designers, all we're all mm-hmm. part of it.
Absolutely, absolutely.
Then I guess thinking about the creative process, it was nice. It was all the students, you know, they were working on it. They made the animations for it. And so I asked them all to research like peer reviewed articles and papers about fast fashion and then come back to the classroom with three facts that they found that they were shocked or interested in and felt like sharing. And then out of that, kind of each student picked one, so that we try to get a nice variety of facts. I feel like in some of the animations a little bit of repetition, but that's because there was a lot of COVID absences, you know, but like people worked so hard on the project. I really wanted students to make animations about facts that they felt were visually stimulating for them and they felt that they could bring a lot to on screen. So they're kind of, they're almost like, We want to treat it like public service announcements. And so we looked at a lot of past versions of those and how they might bring facts to life on the screen. So that was kind of how the animations worked out. And it was really nice because then all the students kind of got to focus on ideas that they were very interested in. And before we started working with Mark, like we were thinking they might just live on monitors in the corridor of the art department or maybe around the campus. So then by working with Mark, then it was so nice that the animations could become a part of this very big, like impactful installation that's really eye grabbing and so much more than just a rectangle screen. And then that I got to go to Macmullen instant, like, you know, it was like, okay, these animations are going to the Macmullen. They're going to be part of an installation. So let's really up the ante. And then that they're going to go to the Smithsonian, like it's really amazing for students. So,
yeah, that's a big deal.
Yeah, I like learning for Mark how he always goes big. You know, he's just like, yeah, we're taking it to the Smithsonian. Don't worry about it. Because I kept saying to students, I'm like, this animation will go to the Smithsonian, and I'm like, is that real? Is that real? What I'm telling them, is it really go to the Smithsonian? And Mark's like, yeah, of course. It's no big deal. Yeah, it's going to Smithsonian. Don't worry about it. So I really like Mark's approach that he makes nothing of big things. Maybe it's something to you, Mark, but you make it seem very easy.
You know, part of my approach to collaboration has always been have the collaborative efforts exhibited in places where they're respected. You know, whether it's the Macmullen, the Smithsonian, a billboard. And I think, you know, we're dealing with a community that's already on a trajectory to do some interesting things, but it could be kindergartners or first graders or fifth graders. And it could be in, you know, communities that, you know, don't have so much access to the arts or different things. And when you know, when a participant, and the participation doesn't have to be huge. Like, there was all of Dean DeVoy's classes and my classes and other classes. We all nominated ideas for the title, voted on it, discussed it, you know, and came up with Aftermath. That's not my title. That's a group decision that came from this process. But if you've participated in any way in these collaborations and then it ends up in these museums, that sort of means, well, I could succeed at other things. You know, if I could be in a major museum, you know, in the United States, I could probably be an engineer or an accountant or whatever, a really good electrician. I mean, you know, it's just like reinforcing, you know, you do what you need to have a successful outcome and that it's possible for everyone, not just some other person gets to do it.
Right. So not only are we tackling an important issue of consumer culture, but uplifting student voices and making it a participatory community exercise. I really love that. Wonderful. So Aftermath really, you know, we've talked about this at length, right? Aftermath is fundamentally an experiment in interdisciplinary collaboration and research. Jane, you talked about how the origin of your students' contribution was first researching fast fashion. Were there alternative mediums that were considered prior to landing on this installation? And did the initial concept change or transform as you began to construct, you know, Aftermath with insights from colleagues and students? And I would add, Jane, I think I'm particularly interested in how important you think it is for your students and for artists in general to have kind of that research as the foundation of their work, of their art, if you think that is important.
Yes, very important. Well, especially with a project like this, you know, there's your own personal experience that you might make work about, but when we're making work like this, we really wanted to orientate itself around the facts. So then, yeah, looking up your peer review work is so important because you want to be able to stand by the work and make sure that you're spreading the truth, you know, and that's inserted into your work. So, you know, every project is different, but for this type of project, it's paramount for sure.
Coming back to kind of that first part of the question then, did that research process and it being an interdisciplinary display, did that affect, you know, the mediums that you used? Did that, you know, did that concept change or transform at all over the course of things?
Well, it was a pretty quick turnaround on the project because I would kind of have four big assignments within the term. So then this was just one assignment. So myself and Mark chatted about it and kind of locked down on something pretty quickly. And then we just had to go with it. But I feel like it's a project that if we had longer to work on, you know, maybe it could have manifested very differently. And we had discussed some other ideas, or like you could do more complex things with the way the video was installed and like maybe it could be projected. But then that's also wouldn't work within the space because the projection wouldn't work well because there's so many windows in the Macmullen. But, you know, with more time, then you have more time to experiment. And so I think we kind of landed on something early on and it was like, well, this is work. We know how to make this work. So let's go with it. But I think this is a project that could happen like every semester, you know, every time we teach this class, because there's just so much rich content within it, you know. What about yourself, Mark? What do you think?
So, well, for starters, I think Dean DeVoy and all of us are looking into continuing it, so it may in fact continue. But I would say that I can speak for my classes for sure, but no doubt it's similar in all the studio classes. Our research methodology, every student in every class, it's part of what they do. You know, for their individual projects, they do presentations on their own research, plus they, you know, they get presented other things. So I think in the contemporary art world, research is just part of, you know, developing ideas and, you know, understanding, you know, what's come before, et cetera. And then I guess to your question, you know, one example that comes to mind is in talking to Dale and those working on this website, you know, for me, it was important to consider having some, not just bringing up awareness, but like some action plan, or at least a discussion of an action plan. So, you know, we talked about it, and, you know, they're going to be sure to include a blog site or somewhere where people from within the Boston College community, but maybe outside, you know, can form small groups to solve problems. And, you know, part of what I find really optimistic about my interpretation of what's happening and what will happen with the Schiller Center and projects like this is that, you know, the premise I have come to learn is, you know, that students today and students in the future really want to work together on solving social issues, and they want to work with different media, and that perhaps, you know, in some situations, an engineer might know how to build something, but somebody, you know, dealing with education or dealing with chemistry might, you know, not have that skill set, but might have this invention of an idea of what needs to happen and coming together. So that it's kind of a metaphor of all of us coming together to make the installation. So, you know, I guess the optimistic part is, it's easy to be overwhelmed by COVID and the environment and you know, Black Lives Matter, so many problems, but also there's universities all over the United States, and I think probably all over the world, who are doing versions of kind of bringing people from different disciplines together to solve world problems. And I find that with all that energy, that's kind of amazing, you know, and just how quickly scientists could develop a vaccination for COVID. You know, I mean, I think computers, the information available through the computer technology just accelerates all kinds of research. It's an amazing tool that way.
Yeah, thank you so much for that response, Mark. I really love how you're almost identifying like the visual arts and in particularly displays like Aftermath is an area, you know, an area for collaboration, especially with the new Schiller Institute. That's a fascinating concept.
I'm a champion of the visual arts, you know, in liberal arts. Of course, I work in the visual arts, but I mean, I like to think I play pretty decent tennis and sports and whatever. You don't do it once every 5 years. You have to like have a practice. And I think creative thinking that requires, you know, just a little bit of being in that world and doing it. And it could be just, you know, building on like making a more interesting mug and writing at it and drawing on it and making it political or funny or decorative, you know, just even like the most simple decisions. But it's just that mindset. And also, you know, the one thing the arts sort of puts forward is critical thinking. You know, it's normal, you know, to have everybody, let's say in my class, you know, critique Aftermath and what's good, what's bad, how can it be better, what's it make you think of. They may come up with 10 ideas and I may think, oh, I just will use this one. Those are great, but not for me. But that approach, one, to critical thinking, but also to have everybody bring their voice to a you know, those different voices and different ideas, rather than we all line up with only one way. You know, that is a way to collaborate, but bringing these different voices together is very powerful.
Great. So I'm going to ask you to expand a little bit more about what you've already been talking about, Mark, and Jane. Of course, feel free to join in wherever you feel comfortable. A lot of people, I think, think about, and I think there's this perception sometimes among BC students and some community members as well. I think we think of museums as these static institutions, right? That we collect art and we hold it, you know, locked up somewhere, art and particularly, you know, art in museums has a little less to do with contemporary issues and realities. I think what something brilliant that Aftermath does is really, in some ways, unlocks the museum and shows it to be much more of an experimental, you know, this idea of an experimental laboratory where these kinds of creative processes and active idea formation, all of that goes on. Could you speak a little bit about that idea of you know, the museum as a collaborative space, as an experimental laboratory, and how Aftermath kind of shows that to be true or not?
Well, I should have started my part of this conversation by saying how grateful I am to Nancy Netzer, Diana Larson, the McMullen Museum for allowing and letting this be. So, you know, they are collaborators in their own way, and also, you know, in a very meaningful way, helping to pick the right space, you know, in the museum, and the right, you know, it's like space I would or wouldn't choose, Jane would or wouldn't choose. So in a very subtle way, you know, they're allowing and they're participating. You know, this is how big your sign should be. This is kind of what should be on it. It's things that really help it succeed. So thank you, McMullen Museum, big time. It's huge. And on very short notice, really. You know, their flexibility is so impressive. And then I guess the other part is, I really appreciate art projects like this that can be seen in museums and public spaces, because everyone can enjoy them and there's not a charge to go see them. And, you know, they're curated spaces, so, you know, they're places of respect. So there's a very powerful endorsement that they're there, but there's also an accessibility that, you know, somebody with deep pockets can buy it and nobody else can see it or whatever. So, you know, my goal is always the idea first. You know, and if it's my own art, you know, more than the sales or whatever, but for people to have a takeaway. And, you know, and I think, you know, in terms of the lab, just, you know, good art adds to the conversation about the issues it addresses, in my view. And the museum is supporting that to happen. And hopefully this really will add to the conversation about fast fashion and the environmental issues around recycled clothing. And so, you know, we're partners in that. In a big way.
Always, yeah. I remember, you know, I took the senior art historical kind of research seminar with Professor Kevin Lodery last semester, and I love this phrase, and I use it like all the time now. He says that art historians and people who act in the art world are the arbiters of beauty, right? It seems very pompous and self-aggrandizing. But that in some ways we decide what is beautiful, and art institutions have that role. And so I think that you're exactly right, Mark. The area where the museum acts is supporting good art that makes a difference, and particularly at a Jesuit institution, right, where we're all about setting the world on fire and you know, making change. I think it's so important that our museum, the McMullen, wants to make a difference and supports an installation like Aftermath that kind of calls our consciences to action. It's really great. And that is, in many ways, I believe, the job of a museum, to be a community institution that wants things to be different and supports art that changes the conversation. That's great. Jane, any thoughts?
Yeah, I think you're both putting it very well. I like Mark really emphasized about how having the installation gave them opportunity, him and his class, opportunity for critique and to maybe reconsider or consider how the work might be improved upon or changed for the future or ideas for the future. And it's just so valuable that we're able to put student work in a museum. Like, how amazing is that? And it's just so valuable to have that space to critique it, because it's so different. Like, A, we probably wouldn't have collaborated. If it was to go up somewhere else on campus, I don't know that it would have had the same life. And so that it was able to be installed here and totally reimagined outside of like the ceramic space or Devlin Hall or whatever, just brings totally new life to the work. And then like with the McMullen as experimental or just opening up collaborations, like the model itself for all the big projects within the McMullen, it's also collaborative based because it's bringing different departments together. Like this semester or last semester, I was working a lot with the Irish Studies on the Martin Parr exhibition. And normally I wouldn't have, I'm Irish, but I don't have that much dealings with Irish Studies because I don't teach there or anything. But it was amazing because then it helped me be in regular contact with them. And I think that's a beautiful thing. You see that happening all over the university, depending on what different exhibition is going within the McMullen. And it's a really unique way to have a museum run, and we're very lucky to have it. I like the museum as an experimental laboratory. Excited to see what else comes out of it.
Absolutely. that is, again, you know, you identify something that's really unique that I love about this institution, that we our exhibitions are always collaborative efforts, and they're also very academic endeavors, right? You know, they originate from professors and from people who want to tackle issues and make change and all of that. That's brilliant. So this is going to be my last question, I think, unless there's, you know, other things that you all have to say. And Jane, you really touched on it. You're giving me a beautiful transition here, which I always appreciate. Was Aftermath, did you have the McMullen in mind as your ideal kind of hosting space when you conceived of Aftermath? And was that the case throughout the creative process, or was it kind of meant for any space and tooled for the McMullen? And how did the McMullen's parameters then affect that, the finished installation, this iteration that we've reached? And of course, you know, we know that pretty soon on March 14th, Aftermath will be moving, so everybody should take a chance to come see it now. Where will it be going next? And do you think that the changed location will affect its construction? Again, a lot of questions in there, so tackle whatever you want from that kind of set.
Well, I can start the answer to that because I'm helping organize Move It. I think when I first was speaking with Dean DeVoy, you know, I said it was really important that these things be shown in places, you know, where they'd be seen and they'd be respected. And we immediately thought of McMullen because this is first and foremost a Boston College project. So, you know, that and I met with Nancy and with Diana and they were open, and it was fantastic that happened. You know, I think I knew at that point, we knew that it was going to go to the Smithsonian, which opens April 8th. But I thought it'd be good to have different venues. And then to your question, in going around the spaces of the McMullen, it is site responsive, you know, so the form of the space of the installation, the height, the width, everything, it was built brand new in response to being able to fit into that space. I am imagining at the Smithsonian, there'll be twice as much recycled clothing, maybe a second monitor, and it'll spread out like this landscape of recycled clothing with the same sort of wooden structures, and maybe a minimum of two, but maybe four simulators, because their space allows for it. And then I think we expect it'll be in the Arts Festival at Boston College afterwards, and I know that the dean has contacted other universities to see if it can travel there. And so it's not like a painting that's frozen in its rectangle. You know, I think it will and can appropriately adjust to space and maybe adjust to more things being added, let's say from other universities or other conversations. Certainly the website will.
I really like that idea of site-specific installation. And also you're giving me a great mental image. I might have to take a trip down to Washington to see this new iteration of the installation. That's great.
Yeah, I think you got it there, Mark. It's a great piece that can just morph to whatever space it's in, I think, and that it can grow in scale or decrease because it has all the ingredients. So it's, and you know, there's an awful lot of pieces that wouldn't be able to do that, that are installations like this that would be able to change so readily. But Mark put in some great work making great wooden structures that are, I guess, are modular and can work in different spaces. So we're very lucky to have Mark's talents on board to make it fit spaces. Yeah, it'd be interesting to see what would happen if projections came in but more time will always, I think, add more to the recipe, whatever.
I think we're going to be able to project it at the Smithsonian, by the way.
Absolutely. That's reached the end of my prepared questions for you both. I want to thank you so much, Jane and Mark, for speaking with us and sharing about this fantastic installation. For our listeners, wherever you might be listening, the McMullen is open every day of the week. You can check our website for hours. And again, thank you so much, Jane. Thank you so much, Mark, for your work, for creating this installation, and for being a vital part of the Boston College arts community.
Yeah, thanks so much. And thanks so much to all our students for putting it together. Like they, especially the animation students, they did the real grafting on it. So one big shout out to them. Yeah, thanks so much for having us and giving us an opportunity to chat about it.
That concludes this episode. The Aftermath installation has moved on from the McMullen Museum of Art. Aftermath is headed to the Accelerate Creativity and Innovation Festival, where it will be exhibited at the Smithsonian Museum of American History this April. Thank you for listening, and be sure to visit The Terrace, the McMullen Student Publications page, to find more episodes like this, as well as our main podcast series, Art in Focus. This episode was produced by Rachel Brody, the McMullen Graduate Assistant and a doctoral candidate in the History Department. It was mixed and edited by Megan Minahan. Thanks to Rachel Chamberlain, the McMullen Manager of Education, for her guidance and support. Finally, thank you to our podcast team, Caitlin Park and Sasha Wong, and student ambassador interviewer, Chris Rizzo. Special thanks to Professors Mark Cooper and Jane Cassidy for their time.